Every community has a place where people meet and stories are told. The East Coast has stoops, the South has porches, and in Alaska, we have Arctic entries.
Here, Alaskans share their personal stories, funny, sad, and sweet. These stories are originally told at our monthly storytelling event in Anchorage. At each live performance, seven people tell a seven-minute-long true story related to the show's theme.
I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robards.
Welcome to Arctic Entries on KSKA, Anchorage.
This hour, we'll hear a combination of stories from two live events. The live show themes, Reaping What You Sow, and Law and Order, come together to bring you a show on rules and consequences.
All of these stories were originally told at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage. We'll also throw in some live tunes from singer-songwriter Amy Liu.
And whose voice is this?
My story tonight is about how I came to meet and then develop a huge, though totally platonic, crush on Kenneth Starr.
That's right, you guys. My lovely co-host Jason Brandeis will end the show with a story of his own. For those of you who don't know, Jason, tell us, who is Kenneth Starr?
Kenneth Starr is a lawyer, a law professor, and an educational administrator. He has also been a federal judge, but he is best known for his role as the independent counsel who investigated Bill Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that story. But first, here's a tune from Anchorage's Amy Liu.
Thank you. shall be released. I see my light come shine.
That was Amy Liu, and you're listening to Arctic Entries on KSK Anchorage.
Your story this show is told by Dan Ritzman. Dan originally shared this in November of 2011 at our live Arctic Entries event. The theme for that show was Reaping What You Sow. Dan lived in Seattle at the time this story was told, but he claims he can out-Alaskan almost any of us. Why don't you decide?
All right, so maybe this story will get a little more Arctic than that. But so right now in the news, you're all hearing a lot about Shell and their plans to develop in the Arctic Ocean. But you might remember before there was Shell, there was BP. And back in the 90s, BP was trying to drill offshore oil wells at North Star and Liberty. And at that time, I worked for this fairly mainstream environmental group called Greenpeace. And we were not very into this idea of offshore oil development. And we tried to stop it every way we could. We wrote a ton of comments, and we litigated, and then we did what Greenpeace does best, which is bear witness and do direct action. And that's what this story is about. So we had this... and we also bought shares in BP, and we were going to do a shareholder resolution at their annual general meeting in London. So we got this idea. We're going to have an ice camp out there where BP was going to develop the North Star oil field. And we found this Danish guy who lived out in Chicoloon who had worked on Greenland and knew all about Arctic travel. And he trained us what to do. And we went out and we found a big DC-3 airplane, really cool. And we were going to land out there on the ice and deploy our ice camp. And it was going to be awesome. So six of us went out there on snow machines, set up the runway, set up our little backpacking tents, and we're ready for the airplane to come the next day. And then turns out our pilot, hope he's not in here, was a little chicken. He got out there and he turned around and went back. And we're all like, oh, shit. Maybe tomorrow. And then that night, the wind started blowing 80 miles an hour. And it blew 80 miles an hour for 6 days. And we're stuck in these little backpacking tents. And we are heating these backpacking tents with green Coleman camp stoves. You all probably went camping with them, and you'd light them up and they would get the tent really warm, like 50, 60 degrees. It's like minus 60 outside. But what I learned is that a Coleman stove needs less oxygen than a candle. Because you could light that Coleman stove and you could be breathing and living, but you'd go to light the candle for light and it would not light. So your brain needs less oxygen than a candle. At least I think it does. So 4 or 5 days later, finally the wind breaks, stops, but our runway is now all lumpy and stuff. So we take like 3 days to fix the runway. And finally we talk the pilot in to it's all safe and sound. He comes in, he lands. We build our little ice camp about a mile from where BP is building this offshore island. And we start bearing witness. And so we would, first day, we snow machine over to the island. We stop about 150 yards from the island and just look at it. And over there's this giant hole in the ice. And about 1,000 gravel trucks a day come out and dump rocks into the ocean. That's how they build this island, and they build it up. So we go and we look at it, and we're like, ooh, it's really cold. Let's go back. So we go back, and the next day, we come back out, and where we stopped, there's a no trespassing sign. And there's a whole bunch of them around the island. So you've got this hole in the ice, gravel trucks pouring rocks in, and no trespassing signs, and then us about a mile back over there. And so every day we come back and we bear a little witness, and we have this thing we call an apple hut, which is this fiberglass hut. It's about 8-foot diameter, and we set it up right there by the no trespassing sign, and we can heat it up. So we come over there and we can get warm during the day and then look around. Well, one day we come back And our Apple Hut, the lock on the door has been broken and jimmied open. And we go inside, and there's this little scrap of paper, which I have a picture of. And it's just a little piece of notebook paper. And on the paper, it says, hey, if this hut's left unattended, it will be confiscated as an abandoned building. And then it's signed, the Alaska State Troopers, all in caps. And so we look at this paper, and we're like, we can't lose our hut. Like, this is safety, you know, we need this hut. And we look over at the island, and on the island, there's these four red Chevy pickup trucks, giant pickup trucks, and they're the security people, and they drive around wherever we go on this island. But they have a truck, and they sit in there, and the truck runs 24 hours a day, and you can see the exhaust, and they've built this little ramp up so they can drive a truck up like 40 feet in the air on this snow ramp and watch us. So we're looking at them, and we're like, well, we should ask about this note. So me and this other guy, we walk over to these trucks, like 100 yards, and we get there, and the guy is filming us with a video camera out of the truck. And he says, I say, did you write this note? And he says, do you know you're trespassing? And I say, I just want to know who wrote this note. And he said, the Alaska State Troopers wrote the note. And I said, well, I want to talk to them. And he said, oh, they'll be here in a minute. And so I walk, I'm like, fine, I'm going to be back over there. Me and this other guy, we walk back over. And all of a sudden, this BP bus pulls up, and 12 Alaska troopers get out of the bus and walk over to us. And the main guy, who we'd met once before, and he might be here too, but I'll call him Colonel Clink. And he said, I hear two of you walk to the island. And I said, yeah, I wanted to know who wrote this note. And he said, you're under arrest for trespassing. And I said, I just wanted to know who wrote the note. And he said, are you resisting arrest? And I said, no. And so he arrested us. He put us in these little plastic cuffs, and he walked us back to the bus, and he kicked us out of the North Slope. And the judge gave us like $10,000 bail. We couldn't come back. We had to get this special permit to come back up to guide trips in the summer. But I had this, so we got this lawyer, and the other guy was this Danish guy, and he'd come just to do this action. And we had rented an apartment in downtown Anchorage over in Fairview, furnished apartment. And one day, he and I were on the phone with our lawyer, and we had this call with our lawyer about our case. And then he went back to this furnished apartment that nobody knew that he had, or, you know, no phone number or anything. And the answering machine was blinking, and he pushed the play button, and it was a recording of our conference call with our lawyer playing on his machine. And then it was like, oh, Alaska is serious about this oil development stuff. Like, this is really difficult. But where we get to the reap what you sow is shortly after this tape recording incident, we actually had this shareholder meeting in London, and we had 20% of BP shareholders said that they should not develop offshore in the Arctic Ocean. Huge victory for us. But my favorite part for me is front page story in the Anchorage Daily News after that happened. And it says, I have to read it. It says, Greenpeace activist Dan Ritzman suffered frostbite, was arrested, and spent weeks in a camp on the Arctic ice stewing in his own sweat before he realized his goal with this BP shareholder thing. And then, being a great quote master that I am, my quote on this is, pretty cool.
That was Dan Ritzman, and you're listening to Arctic Entries. Arctic Entries builds community by giving seven people the stage for 7 minutes once a month. The theme for this show is rules and consequences.
We're talking run-ins with officials and police, or in Mara Gottschick's case, older siblings.
Here's Mara, live at Arctic Entries. This story comes from the show themed Reaping What You Sow.
Those are my friends there. And first of all, I am a doctor, and I'm not taking a beta blocker right now. But I did have a lot of morphine before coming tonight. So who in the audience is a big sibling? A lot of big siblings. So I'm a little sibling, and this is my story. about reaping what you sowed. So you pretty much know where it's going to go from the start. My big sister, her name is Leah. She's 5 years older than I am. And we grew up in this really small town outside of Rochester, New York. And there wasn't a lot of stuff to do. And so when our parents would leave, we would either spend our time like choreographing elaborate dance routines to their Simon and Garfunkel records. Bridge Over Troubled Water was especially touching. Or she would just torment me in a way that only an older sister can do. So it started off pretty physical in ways that I'm sure that most of you guys as younger siblings have experienced, like, you know, the hold down and tickle. Leah took that to the next level and did this move where she would hold me down and start to drool. And, like, the drool would just come, like, down, 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 down. And then she somehow knew, like, the perfect moment where she could just, like, suck it back up. And she would just do this again and again and again. So I'm a lot smaller than she is, but I'm tough and I'm wiry and I'm pretty scrappy. And so I would start fighting back. So she knew that that physical was no longer the way to really continue to torture me. That was when it switched to more of a mind game. What was on her side is that she's incredibly cunning. Also on her side is that I'm exquisitely gullible. Like, so gullible, I'm really not completely sure that it's not written on the ceiling above me right now. A couple weeks ago, somebody was like, oh, Mara, you know that gullible and eligible, those are anagrams, right? Turns out they're not. gullible as a U. So it started off with things like we would like get home, and first she would pretend that she forgot the key to the house. That was really scary. Then she would she would open the door, and our security system would go off, and it would be like beeping and beeping, and she was like, "Oh, girl, I don't know the code. What are we going to do? You're too young to have a police record. They're going to arrest you, and they're going to take you down there." And I was like, no, I think there's a one in it. I think there's a one in it. Like, so terrified. And then, like, just like with that, like, chiming with the drool, she again had, like, perfect timing to, like, go in and turn off the system, and everything was fine. She would make up these like horrible words, like I don't even know where she came up with them, like fart blossom, and she taught me to like say fart blossom, and then made me say it to my parents, which got my mouth washed out with soap, and got me like dragged up the staircase by one arm, being spanked the whole way, and she was just like lounging there, like watching it all happen. Finally, the day came. Of course, totally unbeknownst to me, walking along in my gullible fashion. My parents leave when you'd know that, you know, my parents were gone and they weren't coming back, when you would hear their car wheels go from the gravel onto the pavement. And that sound is so strong in my memory because that's when I knew that stuff was going to start coming. So again, like gravel, pavement, they were gone. All of a sudden, boom, crash. I hear this noise in the living room, and so I run into the living room where I find Leah on the floor grabbing her leg, and she's like, "Nanner," because she never called me Mara. She still has never called me Mara. That was shortened from Pookie Nanner. So she's grabbing her like, "Nanner, Nanner, I've broken my leg," and I was like, "Oh no!" You know, so I run to the kitchen and I get the phone. And I'm like, "Leah, I'm gonna call 911." She's like, "No, Nanner, don't do it. Don't do it. I know how to fix this. All you need to do is get a glass of water, and get a glass of water and bring it to me. We're gonna pour it over my leg, and my leg is gonna be healed. It's gonna be fine." And so I was like, "All right, okay." So I like run into the pantry and I look for the biggest glass I can find, and I get the biggest glass I can find, and I go to the sink and I fill it up with water. And I wanted to do a really good job at this. So there was no like half full, no three quarters full. This was like up to the brim, above the brim, filled with water, and then back walking through the kitchen, walking through the dining room, walking through the living room. It had been really hard to walk with, you know, this super full glass of water. And I didn't want to take any chances on Leah's leg not being healed. So as soon as I was in range, like, poof, across her leg, I threw it, at which point she jumped up and stormed off. Because it took me, being the gullible girl that I am, a good while to realize that she didn't really have a broken leg. She just wanted a glass of water. And then with all of that, she'd just gotten soaked. So she stomped off and got her own glass of water, and she finally got what she deserved. And in a very interesting twist of karma and fate, she is now an actor, and I am now a doctor. So it all came together in the end. But be nice to your little siblings, and thank you.
You're listening to Arctic Entries. I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robards.
We just heard a live recording of Mara Gottschick, who originally told her story in November of 2011 at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage.
Anyone may volunteer to tell a story at Arctic Entries. To submit a story online or nominate a friend to tell a story, visit arcticentries.com.
Our next story is told by two musicians, so naturally, it includes a lot of music. Melissa Mitchell and Spiff often play together in Anchorage, and they are also part of an artistic collective called One Soul.
We travel all kinds of places, but we do a lot of work within the prison system. So we actually spend a lot of time in Sacramento, just outside of Sacramento in Represa, California, at the Folsom Prison, New Folsom Prison. What? And yeah. So, and I have lots of friends with neck tattoos, good times. And anyway, now I'm going to let Spiff talk.
So we've been in, I've been in three times, going for week-long workshop sessions at a time. And first time we went, I met this fellow named Harry Grant. And somewhere towards the end of the week, I managed to slip him one of my CDs, right? Skip forward to the next year. And I come back and I see Harry on the first day. He says, yo, I love that CD. You know, thanks for giving that to me. I was like, no problem, man. He's like, you know the second song, the walking song? He's like, yeah. He's like, I really like that song. He's like, that's awesome. It's great. You know, he's like, you mind if I write my own verses to that song?
I told him no.
That's pretty good.
Well, but I actually really like the part where he came back the next day and Spiff said, so, you know, did you come up with a verse? And, you know, our days are spent mostly communicating, whatever, you know, whatever form we end up communicating. I said, well, Spiff, I didn't write a verse. I wrote five. So I'm going to now play the part of Harry Grant, who is maybe my height. Black, different than me, male parts and stuff. This one's for Harry.
Silly little crossroads where I'm at. No one else around. Got no place to hang up my hat. Footsteps don't make sound until I walk. Till I walk. Till I walk. Doo-doo.
My little feet used to cross the street when moms told me not to. But between her warning and this morning, I feel I've got to. Crossroads call me, first name basis. I sit and ponder. I put one foot in front of the other and end up over yonder. No one knows me, someone show me. I need that horizon. My sticker, my cane, I came up lame. Nah, somebody's lying. I think I'll walk.
There's nothing special here nor there. There's nothing new to be found. There sits a tingle in the air. I think I'll poke around. And I think I'll walk. think I'll walk.
Something new to be found on common ground. Spiff gave me a shot to come up here with him and show I was listening, whether you like it or not. His whole CD was cooler than me. 11 tracks, Shangri-La. All his songs were in my key. $12.95, I got it for free. But the tingle in the air won't cease. I know that now. So to beat the cold, I stomp my feet and I walk around. I need to walk.
I've seen mountains and bright, bright stars and pretty girls without clothes. I like whiskey, I like old guitars. I got faith in those. That's why I walk. That's why I walk. That's why I walk. Do do.
We end up in cities where the music leads us. Travel in mercy. And we crash on couches where the locals need us. Cause we're all thirsty. And we walk through gates where the homegrown feed us. And we sing songs of praise to a four-yard Jesus. But in the last interview, nobody believed us. So we got up and walked. We got up and walked.
Lightning flies across autumn skies, knocking dead leaves around. A windy breeze through cemetery trees, where folks lie dead in the ground. And they don't walk. They don't walk. They don't walk.
Thankful for the chance to stand center stage with Spiff, my man. I heard one song and became a fan. Anyone else in the house with a show of hands? Well, on a serious side, let me slow my roll and tip my hat to our guest one soul. Happy anniversary, 3 years old. Bundle up that baby, Alaska's cold. From here to there, it's a mighty leap. It's been a pleasure to hear you speak. Come back anytime, we're here all week. I'll bring the lyrics, you bring the beat. School's still in session, so pick up your chalk. I build a bridge to hear you talk. Righteous food down to the stalk. So take off these fancy shoes and just walk.
Someday I'll Sunday with a wife and the kids. Dog tied outside. Now's for the campfire in the open road. Fixing to like the ride. And I aim to walk. Aim to walk. I aim to walk.
That actually wasn't all of it, and but we're not going to do it now.
That was Melissa Mitchell and Spiff live at Arctic Entries in February 2012.
This hour on Arctic Entries, we hear Alaskans tell 7-minute true stories. You may have noticed the timer by now. At 5 minutes, we give our Arctic Entry storytellers a warning. And then another timer sounds at 7 minutes. This lets the storytellers know that it is time to tie things up.
Each month, our storyboard coaches 7 Alaskans in sharing their stories at our live event the second Tuesday of each month.
Next, Sage Cohen shares her bicycle misadventures in China. Sage's story involves a handy Chinese-to-English phrase book and a couple of traveling companions she found along the way, two gigantic American football players. This story begins with a train ride.
I checked my bike that night, the night before, like I was told to, and then we met up in the morning in the third-class compartment. The tour book said to get out in Turfan, which is the last stop before Urumqi at the end of the line. It was the most beautiful desert sunrise. We get out on the station, and I know that I need to go find the baggage car and get my bicycle, because the trains don't stay in the station very long. But I couldn't find the baggage car, which meant there was no bicycle, and after just a few minutes, there was no train. There's me, the pioneers, my phrase book, and my football players, but that's about it. But I looked around, and I saw some workers on the dirt track, and I said something like, "Zixingche," which is what I thought bicycle was, according to my phrase book, but they weren't paying me any attention. And I thought, okay. Oh, look, there is one of those light blue 50-pound Chinese steel utility tricycles. I said, fine, if you're not going to give me my bicycle, I'll just take yours. And I put my panniers in the little basket, and I started riding away, thinking, for sure I'm not going to cross a 15,000-foot pass in this thing, but at least I got the workers' attention. Got off the bike, and they led me into the Quonset Hut, which was the train station. With the phrase book, we figured out, Mingqiang, tomorrow. Your bicycle will be here tomorrow. Well, fine, I said. Then I'm going to stay here till tomorrow, too. And I got my tent out and started to set it up in the station. And they tried to pull it away, and so I laid on it, and they tried to drag me away. So I rolled off onto the cement, folded my arms, and I looked up and just kind of channeling Gandhi. It's like, I'm not leaving here without my bicycle. Well, a series of people come by, and they are peering over me, wagging their finger and trying to scold me or pleading with me or sweet-talking me or doing this, which I found out means the authorities are coming, the police are coming. In the end, it was the station master who came, and he spoke really good English. So I got up, and I showed him respect, and he was super polite and apologetic, and he said, tomorrow, your bike will come tomorrow. Well, the two of us walked out of the station, and the football players were still standing there not knowing what else to do with my panniers, you know, an hour later. I don't know what they thought about me stealing the bike and doing my nonviolent demonstration or whatever, but definitely they were really psyched when I said, we are now the guests of the station master at the Railway Hotel. He led us across the street to a really beautiful room, 3 double poster beds, spittoons in every corner, and then he helped us find a guide and a driver because we were in Turfan to go do the touristy things. That night, I went in early and stayed in the room, and the guys went across the street to a restaurant to get some drinks. I'm sound asleep, and then there's like, Sage, open up, let me in. And it turned out, because I told him I had to go to the bathroom, so they let me go. But we've been under house arrest for the past 3 hours. We need your help. Get your phrase book, come on. And I'm thinking, my 2 football players are in trouble with the Chinese police, and I'm supposed to rescue them. So I found out what had happened is when they went for their drinks, they paid for their beers, but then they were set up. 2 local women came and sat at the table, and the waiter tried to bring over some expensive champagne and candy and whatnot, which they were refusing. And then finally, they're presented with a $200 bill. And they're like, okay, on 3. And they got up and did their offensive guard. I looked that up. And they're plowing through the restaurant across the street. They each had 2 Chinese guys hanging on their arms, and they made it as far as the hotel lobby when they were under arrest and he went and got me. So I got downstairs, and eventually the price went down to $20, and they were just happy to pay it. Everybody wanted to get out of there. So I pull out my little notepad and I said, you know, let me get your name and number. Let me see your badge to the police people. But I couldn't make out the Chinese. So instead, I shot them.
This is where Sage pulls out her digital camera.
And you know what? The flash cleared the mob very quickly. No money was exchanged. We got a few hours sleep because the next day at dawn, we needed to be at the train station and get the hell out of that town. I was impressed. The station master was there, and he was right there. And he was very apologetic, just like the day before. So I'm very sorry your bicycle isn't here today. Tomorrow. He said, you all go on to Urumqi. I guess he heard what had happened that night. And I will send the bike down the line when it comes. So we did our tourist things in Urumqi and bought our bus tickets for Kashgar. And every day I checked in at the station. On the fifth day, we were going to get on that bus in the afternoon. Well, there it was. After the broken spokes were replaced, the wheel was chewed, and the brakes were adjusted, it actually worked just fine. And nothing lost, and the only thing gained was the story about how I rescued the American football players and shot the Chinese police. Thank you.
That was Sage Cohen at Arctic Entries in February 2012 at our Law and Order themed show.
For more on Arctic Entries, visit arcticentries.com or alaskapublic.org. Our stories on this show feature rules and consequences. Sometimes the rules and guidelines are set out for us, and other times we have to make them up on our own.
It is important to have those guidelines, but there are times, in the heat of the moment, when you may forget to follow them.
Oh, yes. I think it's time we heard a little bit more from Jason. Here's your Arctic Entries radio co-host, Jason Brandeis, sharing his story live at Arctic Entries in February 2012.
Hello, everyone. My story tonight is about how I came to meet and then develop a huge, though totally platonic, crush on Kenneth Starr. from your laughter, I can tell that you know who Kenneth Starr is. Kenneth Starr is the attorney that was put in charge of investigating the Bill Clinton-Monica Lewinsky affair. Kenneth Starr authored a document that became known as the Starr Report. The Starr Report included excruciating details about Bill Clinton's dalliance with Ms. Lewinsky. Details such as the blue dress, right? Monica Lewinsky's blue dress that was forever stained with President Clinton's DNA. So how did I come to meet Kenneth Starr? How did our paths cross? Kenneth Starr is this hero to conservative causes and this lawyer who represented the United States in front of the Supreme Court many, many times. How did my path and his cross? Well, I am a lawyer, like a few other people up on stage tonight, and several years ago I had the really amazing experience of having one of my cases go all the way to the United States Supreme Court. That case is known as the Bong Hits for Jesus case. It involved the free speech rights of a high school student in Juneau, Alaska, and like most cases that make it to the Supreme Court, it got a lot of media attention. But this case got even more attention than most Supreme Court cases because it includes the ridiculous phrase, bong hits for Jesus. And the media talking heads loved, it made good copy to talk about bong hits for Jesus. So the story got a lot of attention, especially up here in Alaska where everything is news. And when it was announced that Kenneth Starr would be representing the Juneau School Board in the case, that was a news story in and of itself. And my office received a number of calls from reporters who wanted to talk about Kenneth Starr and about whether it was intimidating that Kenneth Starr would be on the other side of this case and whether that changed things and how that would affect the Supreme Court in their opinion. So I agreed to do an interview with someone from the Channel 11 News, and I put on a shirt and a tie and pants, and I'm just kidding. I always wore pants. But they came to the office, and I had my talking points ready. I knew exactly what I wanted to say. I was going to talk about how it doesn't matter who the attorneys are in the case. It doesn't matter what the credentials of the attorneys or the star power. Wow. Sorry. No pun intended there. It doesn't matter who the attorneys are. It's about the law. It's about the Supreme Court's going to look at the law. This is about the First Amendment. So the reporter asks me the question. They asked me the question I was anticipating. They said, is it intimidating having Kenneth Starr on the other side of this case? And does it change things? Will the Supreme Court rule differently? And I looked the reporter straight in the face, and I gave the exact opposite answer that I wanted to give. I eventually said what I intended to say, but first I blurted out, no. Not to sound pompous or arrogant, but it's not intimidating at all. And then I launched into my correct talking points. And of course, what showed up on the news later that night was just the first part of the answer. There's me saying, I'm not intimidated at all by Kenneth Starr, not to sound pompous or arrogant about it, but blah, 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 blah. So much to my chagrin, but to the delight of my coworkers, that's what existed on the news. And I say to the delight of my coworkers because they really ribbed, chided, and jostled me about it for the next few months. I really couldn't do anything at work without having to utter the phrase. So, for example, if there was a problem with a copy machine and I popped my head into someone's office and wanted to ask how to fix it, they'd stop me and say, look at me and say it. And I would have to say, not to sound pompous or arrogant, but where do we keep the toner? Right? So things like that went on for a while, and eventually I found out that I was going to get to go to the Supreme Court to the argument. I wasn't actually arguing the case. A very fine attorney from Juneau named Douglas Mertz handled the argument, but I was going to get to go and sit next to Doug and be there to help him during the argument if he needed any help, and to have all the papers and documents ready and to assist. And it was really it was an honor and a thrill and really something that most attorneys don't get to do, so it was incredibly exciting. But I also was a little scared because I realized this meant I was going to come face to face with Kenneth Starr. And I was worried, what if he has seen the Channel 11 news in Anchorage? So I get to the court, and I make it through security, and I'm in the secret room on the third floor of the court where all the lawyers meet before the arguments, and I meet Kenneth Starr, and he just says hello, and he's very polite and pleasant, and he's glad-handing everyone in the room. There's no incident. Everything's fine. We get through the argument, it goes really well, and after the court hears the arguments, everyone goes their separate ways. I was staying in Washington, D.C. that night, and I was scheduled to do the last interview of the day, the last press meeting of the day for the case, and I was going to Court TV, to go to the Court TV studios to do a cable news interview for their show. And on the way there, my phone rings, and I see that it's the producer from Court TV. My first thought is, oh, great, I'm getting bumped. And I answer the phone, and he says, hi, Jason, I just wanted to let you know that it turns out that Kenneth Starr is available for the interview tonight. And I thought, well, now I'm definitely getting bumped, and man, my mom is going to be so disappointed. She really wanted to watch me on TV. But he says, actually, Kenneth Starr is available. Would you mind if he joins you during the interview? And we'll have the two of you on together. And I think, yeah, of course, that's fantastic. In retrospect, I guess the proper course of action would have been to contact the media people for the ACLU, which is the organization I worked for at the time, and check with them to see if that would be okay. But instead I said, sure, yeah, no problem. I know what I'm doing. That's great. And as I'm walking to the studios, I start to realize that, wait a minute, I'm going to have FaceTime with Kenneth Starr. This is my chance, right? This is my chance to rip into him and be like, why were you such a jerk to Bill Clinton? And what's wrong with you? And to really just, to find out what actually happened. Like, what's Linda Tripp like in real life? All these burning questions that were going on in my mind. But really, I really wanted to, I didn't like this guy, right? And, I kind of wanted to... I get to the studios, and I'm all fired up, and I'm ready to lay into Kenneth Starr, and I go through security, and I get to the green room, and there's Kenneth Starr watching Outrageous Courtroom Moments, which is a television show that was what's on Court TV at the time. They play it in the green room, and it's basically like a courtroom version of Jerry Springer, right? It's just clips of people jumping over the tables and attacking their lawyers and judges, and Kenneth Starr is just watching it and chuckling and giggling, and he sees me, and he comes over to me, and he just sweeps me off my feet. He's so just affable and charming, and he's asking, he's like, hi, Jason, how are you? I thought things went really well today. And he's asking me questions about my background and where I'm from and how long I've been in Alaska and what do I want to do with my career. And I'm just stunned at how nice and pleasant he is. He's sweet and he's adorable. I just wanted to squeeze him and stick him in my pocket and take him home with me. And I wanted to ask him if he would be my grandfather. He just was this wonderful, wonderful man. shortly after we have our first meeting, we chat for a while, and then we're ushered into the room to have our makeup put on. And we're sitting in chairs, me and Kenneth Starr are sitting next to each other in chairs with those little paper napkins around our necks while they put our makeup on. And Cindy, the lovely beauty technician, comes over and she's doing something to me, and I make a joke, and I said, Cindy, like, do you have anything that can make me look like I have more hair? And Kenneth Starr liked my joke. He said, actually, Cindy, I could use some of that too, because Kenneth Starr is also kind of bald. We do our interview, and it goes really well. Kenneth Starr is just, he's just polite, and he complimented me, and I really just, you know, I was just amazed at this transformation, how much I liked this man now. Well, after the interview is over, we're chatting, and we're saying our goodbyes, and I said, Ken, I called him Ken at that point, I said, Ken, can I share an anecdote with you? And I told him the pompous and arrogant story. And I said, you know, I didn't expect you to have seen the Channel 11 News in Anchorage, but I was a little worried that maybe you had. And he said, well, Jason, I hadn't seen the Channel 11 News in Anchorage, but even if I had seen it, I could never be mad at you. Right? So I learned a valuable lesson from all of this. And that lesson, not to sound pompous or arrogant, but that lesson is that Kenneth Starr totally digs me. Thanks.
You're listening to Arctic Entries on KSK Anchorage. That was Jason Brandeis, co-host of Arctic Entries Radio, sharing his story live at the Snow Goose. Listening to that story again makes me wonder if Kenneth Starr has heard the Arctic Entries Radio Hour.
Or maybe he's been to the Arctic Entries website. At the very least, we know he's not going to be mad about this.
Okay.
Finally, we'd like to feature some more music from local musician Amy Liu. Amy currently spends her days teaching the delightful students at the Anchorage Waldorf School. Here's a song she wrote for them.
I thought I'd put it down in words, my heart a-bloomin' through me, but my vocabulary, it limits me this time. So I'll sing hallelujah. Oh, spring is coming back, I know she is, I know she do. Oh, hallelujah. On wings like hope, on belly laughs, on singing songs with you. Do-do-do-do. Do-do-do-do. You tell me that I'm pretty, and you tell me that I'm great. You tell me when I'm grumpy, when I'm wrong, and when I'm late. You give it to me honestly, with care but not reserve. So much more than I ask for, so much more than I deserve. So I'll sing hallelujah. Oh, spring is coming back, I know she is, I know she do. Oh, hallelujah. On wings like hope, on belly laughs, on love letters from you. Do 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 do. Do do do. You're always up for dancing, and we sing lots of songs. My crazy schemes are much appreciated, you always come along. You hear me when I whisper, and you know notice when I'm sad. You remind me of forgiveness and the best days that I've had. So I'll sing hallelujah. Oh, spring is coming back. I know she is, I know she do. Oh, hallelujah. On wings like hope, on belly laughs, on whispering with you. Hallelujah. Oh, spring is coming back. I know she is, I know she do. Oh, hallelujah. On wings like hope, on belly laughs, on holding hands with you. Do 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 do. See you tomorrow morning. Do 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 do. Please don't forget your hat. Do 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 do. Yes, we'll be here all together. Do 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 do. You can count on.
Thank you. Thank you. If I played a waltz, would anybody dance? You would? Here's my thinking, is that even if you're not gung-ho about waltzing, I think, or about dancing, I feel like it's always a really good thing to, you know, work up the nerve to invite somebody to dance, right? It's good for you. And how wonderful is it to be asked to dance? Seriously, it's great. So, will you dance? You don't have to have a partner. I'm going to just try it. So just, you know, you can do it. You can do it. Now's the time to be asking somebody to dance. Woo, I see you. Thank you. Who's gonna shoe my pretty little feet? Two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, one. Who's gonna kiss my red ruby lips? Who's gonna be my man? Papa's gonna shoe my pretty little feet. Mama's gonna glove my hand. Sister's gonna kiss my red ruby lips. Good job. I don't need no man. And for those of you that refuse to dance, you can sing with me. I don't need no man. I don't need no man. Kiss my red ruby lips. Woo! Was on that train and gone. 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 The only man I ever did love was on that train and gone. Okay, those of you who are still sitting, there's a whole other verse. You could go home without regrets if you get up now. You can do it. Who's gonna shoe my pretty little feet? Who's gonna glove my hand? Who's gonna kiss my red ruby lips? Who's gonna be my man? Good job, back of the room. Late in the game, but that's okay.
up that's gonna shoe my pretty little feet. Mama's gonna glove my hand. Sister's gonna kiss my red ruby lips. I don't need no one. Here's the time for your big moves. I don't need no man. I don't need no man. Sister's gonna kiss my red ruby lips. I don't need no man. Last chorus, make it count. I don't need no man. I don't need no man. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy Lou. That song was originally recorded at our February 2012 Arctic Entries event. Thanks for tuning in to this hour of Arctic Entries. To hear these stories again or to share them with friends, arcticentries.com. We also have information and themes for our upcoming live shows the second Tuesday of each month, and details on how you, too, could tell a story.
We'd like to thank our storyboard, the storytellers for this show, and our musical guest, Amy Lou. All of the proceeds from our shows are donated to a local social services nonprofit organization. Information about this is also on our website.
And Arctic Entries on KSK Anchorage. I'm Rosie Robards.
And I'm Jason Brandeis. We'll leave you now with our theme song by the Supersaturated Sugar Strings. Thanks for listening.
Where will we go? What will it be? I want to be yours, but I want to be free. What will we do when times get tough? Improve our life or play from the rough. I love the start of new things to come, and I love your lips. What I get me some. Will we fuss and fight when things go wrong? Will we laugh and sing every day a new song?
We'll just have to see what will be, will be. We can swim or sink in our new beginning. Oh, I'll just let it be. No more inquiries, darling, I'll be. No more reassuring.
Things are looking up. You're the best of them all. Will I keep my word? Would I have resolved? Eat a little less pork and be nice to you all. Don't need to know what the future stores. Just need your touch. Who could ask for more? Of this year, will my face look the same? Will we fall in love, or just fall like the rain?
We'll just have to see what will be, will be. We can swim on the sea in our new beginning.
reassurance.